This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting and depends on the support of listeners like you. If you can, please donate today at mpbonline.org. And thanks.
The 10-Minute Timeout is a mini-podcast that brings Mississippi sports stories to life. Join me, Lacey Alexander, as I learn more about the teams, athletes, staff, and programs that make our state proud. One-on-one interviews with influential playmakers paint a clear picture for listeners of how Mississippi sports inspire and energize our community. New episodes released every other Friday on your favorite podcasting app.
Good morning, good morning. It's Catfish Monday. It's Deep South Dining right here on MPB Think Radio. Carol, you don't have on your headphones over there. You got to get wired into the going zone. Good morning, Carol. How are you?
Morning, Mal. Just a little slow this morning.
We were off last week. We're off now.
Yeah, when you said the word catfish, I just, you know, it made me happy.
Well, I hope you've had a good week. I know I have. You know, it's May. It's summertime. Things are changing. Farmer markets, vegetables, fish fries, cookouts. There's a lot of fun stuff ahead.
Oh, yeah. Kentucky Derby really parties look. Over the weekend, graduations, all that good stuff. It's May.
We had a birthday party, so I'm sending out a shout out to Wren Webb this morning. Wren, 8th birthday this week, and so we had her a little throwdown yesterday, and we had watermelon and pizza and such. So
you had watermelon in May?
Mm-hmm. We did.
You know, I've been wondering about that. I drove Highway 49, the great Highway 49 watermelon row,
yeah,
last week, and there were like 3 watermelon trucks on the side of the road, along with selling watermelons and boiled peanuts. And I thought watermelons weren't until mid-June, but
early.
I guess
this is the early batch.
Technology, and
I will say this about what you're saying: they've yet to put the word Smith County on there because those aren't in yet. When they put Smith County watermelon, Smith County tomatoes, that's when I stop.
Yeah, and that's when we know that the watermelons are actually from Mississippi.
Right, local.
They come from somewhere.
We don't know where they come from. But you know what else is happening this time of year, and Cooking and Coping, our Facebook page, is just full of it, is the soft shell crabs are happening, and everybody's featuring soft shell crabs.
Well, that's a beautiful thing.
Love them.
Doesn't it make you want to run down to the Gulf and wade in the water and catch some yourself?
I would love to. I've done that once before at a Jubilee in Mobile Bay. I was fortunate enough as a child to be down there with my cousins when there was a Jubilee, and you could just pick those crabs up. They were just came right up to the surface.
Why don't we tell people who may be like from North Mississippi what is a Jubilee?
Well, it's this weird occurrence where the moon and the planets all line up in a certain way, and sea creatures all come to the surface. I'm not a scientist. I don't know exactly what the phenomenon is about, but it's called a Jubilee. You can look it up, Google it, go look at it, find it on search. But fascinating. That's why the bridge in Mobile is called the Jubilee Parkway, because of that phenomenon, the Jubilee phenomenon.
Well, but, you know, my dad grew up in Mobile, and I loved hearing him talk about, you know, he experienced maybe 2 Jubilees during his childhood, and they would ring the bells. I mean, bells would ring. I guess they would ring church bells to let everybody know that there was a Jubilee, and everybody would go down to the bay with their nets and their buckets and ice chests and all those good things.
But that aside, the soft shells are molting. The crabs are molting, and there are soft shells abundantly out there, so go enjoy. It's a seasonal thing. I know Dugan's has them, or has had them. I don't know if they're going to have them this week, but he had them last week, so check that out.
And what's your favorite preparation?
Well, I like them fried. I like them broiled. I like them cut in half and served in halves, and even sometimes quarters, because there's a little less of the body, more fried. So I like them cut up and deep fried.
Well, I'm really glad to hear you say that, because you made fun of me for the soft shell crab and pasta dish I did a few months ago with those baby Buster crabs.
I made fun of you. Well,
yes,
you know,
did.
I'm like that.
Huh?
I'm a
well,
bully.
I know. You are a bully. And you said, why would you go cutting up a good soft shell crab?
See, there you go.
I know. Bully.
Contradict myself. That's how I like them anyway. So I've got you a piece of fresh peach pound cake that Kara made. Hope you can enjoy that. Marissa got a piece. Java got a piece. Did you see your piece? Okay.
Well, Java probably got it.
It's floating around here somewhere. Maybe out there on the desk.
Oh, I'm going to find it
okay.
now.
It's got fresh peaches on the backside of the bundt cake. And so they're on the bottom. But it's really good, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So on Cooking and Coping this week, we had a couple of really interesting things. It's always fascinating stuff on there. If you haven't checked it out, go to our Facebook page, Cooking and Coping. And there was this whole sort of piece about the Dutch baby, Carol. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. Who was our poster?
I don't know. I'll have to look it up here.
Yeah, look it up. I wrote it down somewhere, but the Dutch baby is something that we got into as a group during the pandemic.
We did.
And I remember Beth Kitchings was the first one to post it. It was, you know, right when the pandemic started, and everybody started making Dutch babies, and we probably had 50 Dutch baby pictures on Cooking and Coping, and I had never heard of it. And, you know, what it is like a fluffy pancake. It is the easiest thing. It is the, you know, most fun-looking thing to put on your breakfast table, but I make mine in my 10-inch cast iron skillet, and all it is eggs, milk, flour, a pinch of nutmeg, salt, a little bit of butter, and you heat up your skillet first, get it really hot. When you pour it in there, like it just fluffs up all over the place, and you sprinkle it with powdered sugar, maybe a little fruit, and it's absolutely delicious. And I think she had actually made her Dutch baby for supper.
That's right. It's Diane Ladyhawk, one of our...
Yeah, she's a great poster.
Exactly. One of our great Cooking and Coping co-creators and partners. Thank you, Diane, for that post on the Dutch baby. And I have never made one, but Carol has, and so... It looks like you were successful, and congratulations on a beautiful photo, by the way.
Yeah, and just the history of the Dutch baby. The Dutch baby is not really Dutch.
Uh-oh.
I think it is actually the heritage. It's a German pancake, and someone kind of adopted the name instead of Deutsch. Said Dutch. So there you go. That's how you get credit for the Dutch baby.
Also, Carol, sadly, this week we have to acknowledge and send out our condolences to our great friend Janet Wagner, who lost her husband Tom, which is a part of our family, our Cooking and Coping and Deep South Dining family. Janet is a fabulous cook, a great hostess, and one of our great friends, and we're sorry for her loss.
She is indeed, and worked with me at the Everyday Gourmet for 20 years. In fact, I was around when they started dating. And
really?
Yeah. So,
ain't it funny how time slips away?
How time slips away.
Well, anyway, our condolences to Janet, her family, and... We are sorry for your loss.
You know, Janet sells her wonderful foods out at Doris Berry's Farmer's Market.
Correct.
And it was really coincidental that last night I fed John Janet Wagner's Brunswick stew.
Ah.
And let me tell you, it is fine. And we had requested this winter that she make. We were looking for somebody that did it, and so she made it and started selling it. But a wonderful person, a wonderful cook, and we are so sad for Janet.
All right, on a lighter note, in Food and Wine this month, the Food and Wine magazine, Mississippi and Jackson's very own Chaz Lindsay is prominently displayed from Polito. here in Jackson. Chaz is featured in a Visit Mississippi promotion. It says, in Mississippi, our rock stars wear aprons and yield sharp knives.
I like it. Yes. I like it.
So a shout out to Chaz Lindsay at Polito. Keep on making those great pizzas and that great homemade pasta.
Well, it's I have delish. A question for you.
Yes.
You sent me a picture of a LaBella burger.
Oh, yeah. That was a Delta thing. Something I've been fascinated with. It's referred to as a floating hamburger. And the business was called LaBella's, I think, or still is, right? Is it
I don't
there?
Know.
It's in Indianola, I believe.
Are you talking about Pea Soup's Lotto-Freeze?
I think so. Or is that one in the same? I think Pea Soup's Lotto-Freeze is the existing current contemporary restaurant that sells the old LaBella's floating hamburger.
I have never
I have
seen
right.
a floating hamburger, but describe for our listeners
it is a large
how this hamburger floats, because it is swimming.
It's a large platter with chili and a hamburger plopped down in the middle of it, submerged.
Well, it
partially
literally
submerged.
Looks like it's swimming like a raft on top of a sea of gravy or chili.
So for folks who know more about the LaBella burger, please call us and get us on straightened out on this. But that's my understanding, that it was a longtime Delta favorite that is still carried on today.
Well, this restaurant, Pea Soup, when I was in Indianola working on the B.B. King Museum, people say, let's go to Pea Soup Lot. And I never could make that name work, but it's Pea Soup's Lotto-Freeze and fine food. And boy, do they have some fine tamales.
Am I right that it's in...
It's in Indianola. It's between Indianola. It's on the west side, like if you're leaving Indianola and going to Greenwood.
So if anybody knows more about this story, and I saw it was on somewhere on the internet is where I found that photo, and someone was talking about that floating hamburger. But I've long been fascinated by it. So if there's more info to be shared, let us know. You know, I mentioned earlier that it's May, it's summertime, and it's time for fish fries, Carol. So we've got something coming up in the next segment. We're going to talk about a fry. Our friend Tim Pierce posted on Cooking and Coping a crappie fish fry that he did.
Yeah, and I loved it. He was at Edwards Farm in North Mississippi, where he spends his weekends, and said... A friend literally walked them across the street from the lake. That's how fresh they were.
So fresh.
But it's crappie season, it's brim season, and catfish are always
catfish
in
are
season.
Jumping.
Yeah.
So we're going to have Katie Simmons.
Katie Simmons Prosser
is going to call in when we come back from short break. And she's with Simmons Catfish, one of our legendary catfish providers here in Mississippi out of Yazoo City.
And she's also a really good sport. I mean, you and I started talking catfish last night. Java was, as he said, dropping a few catfish last night. And I'd had a catfish fry. And we said, well, why don't we call Katie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's Sunday night at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And what did she say?
She said, I'll be happy to call in tomorrow and talk about it.
Yes,
so,
she did.
After a short break, we will come back with a conversation about fish fries, particularly catfish. And Katie Simmons Prosser from Simmons Catfish in Yazoo City will be our guest. Welcome back to Deep South Dining. Malcolm White, Carol Palmer in the studio with us. Very special guest, someone we used to have on weekly, and we rarely ever get him on because he's so busy now.
He's an executive.
He's a director of radio. Java Chapman, how are you, sir?
Man, I'm okay. It's just, you know, Monday.
Yeah. I happened to be out in the lobby when Java walked in the front door, and there were three people waiting, lined up, waiting to talk to him.
It's like, boom, boom, boom. So...
So we were talking about catfish, and you said last night as we were texting about what we're going to talk about today, you said you were in the middle of dropping some catfish.
Yeah,
tell us about it.
It just was funny, you know, that you guys were talking about catfish, and I was exactly doing that, dropping some catfish. I can't remember if it was Simmons or Delta Pride. I don't want to, step on anybody's catfish. But I know it wasn't a product of China. I'll tell you that.
It was local.
It was local.
We'll call it Simmons. I think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, but no, it was just a Sunday night, and I think I've done that. Every so often I'll pull out the Fry Daddy.
So do you do it inside or out?
Oh, outside. Yeah.
You take the Fry Daddy out in the yard.
Uh-huh. And it's
what size do you have?
Oh, just a little.
The little one?
Yeah, the little round one. Okay. Because my kids, they're kind of funny on it, and I used to drop way too much. So now I know how to drop maybe about 10 pieces or something, 10 pieces of fillets.
So you're doing fillets?
Yes.
Do you know
what
ounce they are, what size they are?
Last night they were pretty big. I don't know what the ounce was, but you know, it was enough for me and Crystal to take care of.
And what do you prepare them in? You dredge them in anything and you dust them in something else? How do you do yours?
Well, really, I kind of season them before, and depending on what I have, it's just, you know, whatever's in the cabinet.
Cornmeal? Fish fry? What do you use?
Well, I do the fish fry.
Uh-huh.
But it's like Tony's or any other kind of seasoning if I'm trying to get exotic. I know there's a Tabitha Brown pineapple mango I played around with a little bit, all-purpose seasoning. But then, yeah, just dip them into the Louisiana fish fry, then drop them in the grease and easy peasy. When I text y'all, I said, nothing fancy. It's just, you know.
Catfish in the yard.
We were all having catfish on the brain last night. Now, you know, I love show and tell, and I brought this catfish fry.
Golden fry.
Yeah, I like to go through the grocery store and pick up one of everything they have on the shelf to try, because I have to fry a lot of fish.
One thing I will say, who was it? Master P, the rapper from New Orleans, Master P from No Limit Records. He had a fish fry. I think he still has it. But I even tried his fish fry, and it was, you know, I think it's like his grandmother's recipe, quote unquote. But, you know, I'm like you, Carol. I grab some things. I try some things.
Yeah, I'm really on to this one. This is Nona Bell's Golden Fry Fish Breading, and Nona Bell, she is from Arkansas. It's called Sam and Sam's Products, and there's another one I've been using lately called Andy's that I've never seen before, but it's fun.
So before we continue with our catfish conversation, we got a caller. I want to ease Don in. Don from Hernando has a question about pancakes. Hello, Don.
Hey, good morning. Thank y'all for so much that y'all do for the state of Mississippi on MPB. I just love every one of y'all.
Well, thank you, sir.
Now, what I wanted to say was y'all had Robert St. John on. It's been a while now since he was on there, but I immediately went over to Square Books in Oxford and bought his Mississippi Mornings cookbook, mainly because of his Muzz's pancakes that he was talking about, because I've always fancied myself as a pretty good pancake maker, although I've never made one that rivaled my mother's growing up. And so I had to try it. So I came home, cooked it up. And I tried it on the electric griddle first and did not like it as much on the electric griddle, which is where he recommended, but I did it on the stove in the frying pan. And those are the best pancakes that you can ever eat.
Well, you know, Robert says that, and you know, he swears by it. I haven't made it. I'm looking at the recipe.
But remember, he doesn't serve these at the Midtowner. That's a different pancake. The Muzz's is his grandmother's, and he only put them.
That's right.
His recipe is in this book, Mississippi Mornings, but not the ones that he serves at the Midtown.
Well, he has the Muzz's pancake recipe online. Just put in Robert St. John pancakes. But now, I don't see anything unique in these ingredients. So tell us, Don, what you got? How'd it go?
I don't know what the difference was, but it just fried up differently than any pancake I've ever done. Like you said, the ingredients are all the same.
Wow.
And
it has to be the proportions.
Yeah, yeah. It's Robert's magic. It's Robert's magic.
It's some Robert magic.
I don't know what it is, but they are the pancakes that I grew up with. And like I said, they're the best. Anyway, I just wanted to make that comment. Thanks to you.
Okay, and go ahead and try Dutch Baby and let us hear about that.
Oh, okay, I will.
It's a challenge for you. Too.
Now, I heard y'all talking about the Dutch Baby. Do you need, like, a special Dutch contraption?
It's your cast iron skillet.
Okay, okay.
You just pour, like, three, and it goes poof. I mean, it has a lot of
it does what,
party Carol? Flair.
It goes what?
Poof.
Okay. Poof goes the Dutch Baby. Well, Don, thank you so much for listening to our show, and thank you even more for calling in and sharing your pancake caper. And shout out to Robert St. John and his newest book, Mississippi Mornings, for that recipe is Muzz's Pancakes. He says they're the greatest, and Don agrees. All right, let's go to the phone now. We've got our good buddy Katie Simmons-Prosser on the phone. Hello, Katie. How are you? Good morning.
I'm good. How are y'all doing?
We're doing great, and we thank you for being a good sport and jumping on at the last minute. But all three of us, Java, Malcolm, and me, were thinking catfish last night, so we thought of you.
I guess it's that time of year.
That's what it is. I think that is right. It's just that time of year.
Yeah.
So is it a catfish time of year because people want to get out and have catfish fries?
I guess so. You know, I feel like in Mississippi, it's almost like a crawfish bowl or something. Everybody wants to have a catfish fry. Every church wants to have one. I feel like I've been to more catfish fries this year than in any other year. I don't know what's going on.
That's great. So tell us about Simmons and your family business, how y'all got started, and sort of a brief history just for our listeners.
Well, we've been our processing plant has been open for almost 45 years. My father started farming catfish in the 70s and was just looking kind of for a way to sell his catfish. He was having trouble with that, so he opened the processing plant in 82. And it's kind of been a family business ever since then. My grandmother worked here. I work here now. My husband, Andy, works here. And we just love what we're doing.
Great. Well, I appreciate what y'all do. We have always served Simmons at Hallamau's during my tenure there, and I hope that they still are. You got any catfish frying tips for our listeners, some things to do, not to do, that might be helpful?
Well, you know, we sell our own breading, so that's what I typically use. It's kind of yellow cornmeal, yellow corn flour, and it has like a lemon pepper in it that I feel like it makes it stand out from other catfish breading. But really, we just, you know, get the catfish kind of dry, but it's still a little wet, and dip it in the dry batter and go straight into the oil.
So nobody really washes
the recipe.
Nobody really washes catfish. They go catfish into dry batter into the fry. Nobody goes milk or eggs or anything like that, right?
No, we never really have. I mean, I know a lot of people like to do a wet batter, but we've never really done that.
Mm. Okay.
You know, one thing I wanted to ask you is, I've been reading, or I read, that you should let the catfish rest for a few minutes after you put the batter on, and that was, I mean, the mix on, and that was kind of a new idea to me, because I, you know, shake it and do it and just put it right in. Mm. But I noticed at our catfish fry this weekend, the world famous catfish fryer Eddie Denton Jr., who is a Capital City policeman and wonderful fish fryer, you know, he was doing a lot of catfish, but he would batter them, and then he had them kind of, you know, laid out in the pan for a while. Hmm. And I wondered if that makes a difference, or if any of y'all wanted to comment on that.
Well, we like to make sure we shake all the excess breading off, and that kind of helps. One thing we also do is, before we put it in the breading, kind of salt just the raw catfish. That adds a little bit to have it salted before.
Yeah, Java, you said you seasoned your fish before you dredged it.
Yeah, I do. I seasoned it before. And I was going to say, with Katie's talking about the lemon pepper flavor, I do like sometimes when the breading does have like a little bit of a flavor already to it, so you don't have to over-season your fish. Other than that, you're just eating plain breading And that's no fun.
Katie, when I was shopping at Corner Market last week for catfish for my catfish fry, I noticed y'all had three different products. I first picked up, you know, and got all the way to the checkout line, and I think it said chunks. Did I remember?
Catfish chunks?
It said chunks, and then you had tenders.
I wonder if the chunks are like the nuggets.
That's a nugget, I believe.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
That's different? Oh,
can
okay.
we try to get Katie?
But
I'll cut out, but y'all are coming back.
Okay.
Okay. I was asking about the different products you sold. I did not realize it till I picked up boxes that were not fillets. You had others. I think chunks.
Well, we have what we call fillet bites, which are the fillets just cut up. If when we get a fillet in that's not, you know, perfectly, looks like a perfect fillet, we cut it up into a fillet bite. And they're about 1 ounce pieces. And then we also have fillet strips, which are really great for when you're having a fish fry. Cause a lot of people get their fillets and cut them into strips.
Right.
But we sell them already cut into the strips, and they're about 1 to 1.5 ounces. And then we have the fillet portions, which might have been what you were thinking of, the chunks. But the fillet portions are just portions of the fillets. And they're, you know, a lot of buffets like to use those where they don't all have to be uniform in size.
They're like three to four?
But it's kind of a cost-effective way. Well, the portions are about 3 ounces, yeah.
So I couldn't relate that to. I ended up with the fillets because I couldn't really think of how the portions are chunks.
Now, Katie, you say you do the strips, which I know are very popular, but do y'all do the thin cut catfish?
Well, you know, we sometimes we'll cut for like for Kate that's in Ridgeland, the restaurant. Mm-hmm. We cut catfish chips for them.
Chips, okay.
And it's kind of the same idea of the Middendorf cut, where right. you cut it kind of the fillet's flat, and you cut it parallel and really thin strips, mm-hmm. and just fry it real crispy. But we don't really typically sell a thin cut like that.
Well, we have to shout out to Kate's Nashville hot chicken. Nashville hot chicken, their take on Nashville hot chicken is
hot catfish.
Jackson hot catfish.
Yeah, it's terrific.
I gotta go
and
on record.
Yeah, that's the catfish chips.
And say I don't like thin.
You don't like thin and crispy?
I have to put it out there like thin and crispy. We were at a restaurant, and one of the guys that we were eating with, he was like, I want it fried hard, and actually sent it back to the kitchen because it wasn't fried hard enough. I was like, wait a minute, like this just
seems like it'd get dry.
It's not my style, but that's what they wanted though.
Yeah,
you know, I think about that with the thin. Maybe y'all can educate me, but I would think the thin would be kind of dry a little bit. I don't know.
You have to get it at Middendorf's, which is right before the bridge going into
Arcade.
New Orleans. They don't have thin and crispy.
They have this
Jackson
that's thin.
Hot.
It's not?
No, it's not thin. It's they're bites. Cat, what are they?
Well, the at Kate, those are the catfish chips, but they kind of curl up when you cook them for that long. So I guess the Middendorf, they don't cook theirs as long.
Okay.
Well, there's a couple of options for you, Jonna.
Okay, I may have to try some, but I see I'm a filet man.
Filet man.
You are a filet man. Yeah, we've got to talk sides here. Okay. I want to hear what everybody's favorite catfish sides.
Welcome back to Deep South Dining. Malcolm White, Carol Palmer, and Java Chapman in
the
studio.
Hey, I'm here.
Yep. Well, we've got Katie Simmons Prosser on the phone from Yazoo City, from Simmons Catfish. But Katie, we're going to take a call right before we jump back into our conversation. We've got a caller calling us from Mobile, and Suzanne wants to talk about types of oil to, I guess, cook fish in. Hello, Suzanne.
Well, you got it, man. That's my question, basically. Of course, you know, and I want to express my appreciation for this show and for the hosts and for the guests.
Well,
and for the people who are the screeners. I mean, I really do, sincerely. But, yeah, the types of oil, I mean, this sounds like such a simple question, and it is, I'm sure. But it's important, isn't it?
What very types of important. Oil? Let's toss it to the expert, Katie.
Well, we are really always peanut oil. We kind of stick with that. It gives us the best product, we feel like. But I know a lot of people use different things.
Peanut oil actually has a higher smoke point.
Right.
I'm a peanut oil person, too. What about you, Java?
I'm a canola.
You like canola?
Canola. Yeah.
Well, you know.
Or vegetable, whatever, you know.
When you're frying seafood, you have to understand that the seafood, no matter how dry it is when you batter it, still is wet on the inside. And so this will break your oil down over time. And that's one thing to consider is that, you know, the heat. And how quickly the oil burns. But the other is the flavor. A lot of people love the peanut oil flavor. Some like the canola flavor. But anyway, there are choices that are both relating to, you know, how the oil holds up, longevity. You know, in a restaurant, you really think about this because you're frying all day long. But at home, that's not such an issue because you're going to fry a batch and maybe save it again, do it one more. I don't know how often people use their oil. But anyway, I think it's a preference thing. But, you know, Suzanne, I think it's like whatever kind of oil you like. Certainly not olive oil. It's not built for that.
And it's too expensive for that. And it would impart a lot of flavor. But I'm going down on the side of whatever Simmons Catfish is frying in. If they're frying in peanut oil, by golly.
What did you fry in yesterday?
Peanut oil. I got those giant containers of peanut oil.
Okay. I may have to try peanut oil. I admittedly have never tried peanut oil.
Oh, there you go.
I don't know exactly what the difference is. It's pretty significant. The peanut oil has a higher smoke point.
Yeah.
Now, what would Wesson oil be? Would that
a
be
vegetable oil?
That's what you're using, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, Suzanne, thank you for that question.
Thank you.
No. And we appreciate our listeners, so thank you.
Now, the real question is, what's the best way to get rid of the oil? After you use it. Now, that's the real trick.
Yeah, in the restaurant business, we all have a grease container, and literally there are services that come and pick it up and buy it from you and recycle it.
Oh, wow.
But at home, there is no such service. That's a dilemma. What to do.
That's my husband's job.
And what does he do?
He likes to strain it. I mean, he'll strain it and reuse it. Just since we're not a restaurant using it every day.
Yeah, so I strain mine and use it. I have, you know, I have a strainer and hold, you know, a funnel back over the bottle. It's kind of a messy thing, but I use mine several times.
You know, growing up, this is what I just thought of when you were saying that. Growing up, we had this vat on the stove that you poured your bacon grease into, and it had a strainer on the top. But you kept this container of bacon fat on. I have one of those, a little jar of bacon fat at my house up there by the olive oil and the salt and pepper.
Me too.
So anyway.
Okay, back to sides.
All right.
Okay, who goes first?
You go first. You just had a fish fry.
I am a woman of the hush puppy. Can't have a fish fry without a hush puppy.
And do you have a good recipe or just what basic ingredients do you use?
I have several recipes, but I like to buy them right next to the catfish frozen.
Yeah, already ready.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. And then how do you cook them? What do you do?
Just right after you cook your fish, you just put your hush puppies in the oil. Drop them
frozen ones?
Yes.
Okay. I've never used a frozen.
That's why you're at Deep South Dining.
Say to learn.
Okay, Katie, your favorite side.
I think my favorite side would be cheese grits. I feel like I had one time I was at an event and Nick Wallace made thin catfish on top of cheese grits.
And I like it.
I've ever had.
I like it. I've had that. That's a delicious dish.
I don't know how people listen to the show in the morning
and make it through
the day, because that just those two words, cheese grits, has put me on a thing.
See, here's what happens. Everybody who listens to this show has an early lunch.
Java, somebody in Cooking and Coping mentioned grits drizzled with bacon drippings. How about that? Catfish over grits drizzled with bacon drippings.
I think he likes it.
Yeah, I can dig it. I can dig it all the way.
Well, I'm going to have to go with coleslaw is my favorite side.
I'm not surprised, and I believe that your brother,
Hal, made a notoriously delicious coleslaw.
Hal's Outlaw coleslaw.
Three different peppers, a green, an orange, and a yellow. Thin, thin sliced with red onions, also thin, thin sliced, capers, and dill weed, mayo, lemon, salt, pepper, and such. Delicious coleslaw.
Hail.
Cut it thin,
Hail's
thin,
coleslaw.
Thin.
Yep.
And then there's always French fries.
Yeah.
Not so much?
Well, I mean, that's okay.
That's me. I'm catfish and fries.
Okay. What kind of fries? Homemade, frozen, crinkles?
You know, we had crinkle right, cut. Out the mm-hmm. bag.
Out of the bag.
He has kids. He don't have time.
Yes. No. Not at all.
You're not twice frying French fries.
The faster the better. The faster the
better. And duck fat.
Greens. Sometimes
love
when we have
greens
catfish fry, we put a big pot of greens
next
to it.
No, this doesn't always go off as well, but spaghetti.
There we go. We've talked about that
spaghetti.
Before.
We've talked about that being an African-American tradition.
Right.
Yeah, it's in the pantheon of African-American cooking, catfish and spaghetti. I almost did it last night, but I just
didn't have time.
There you go.
You
know,
scrambling.
I did.
Java, as that is not my tradition, I was very surprised, and I brought that to the show, that Lee's Heavenly Barbecue on Catfish Day also has spaghetti.
Yeah,
of course
they do. Well...
Say, if you didn't know, you didn't know.
I didn't know you put it together. Katie, did you know that?
I did. I feel like that's a very common thing. I've heard of it a lot. We don't do it very often, but it kind of reminds me of, like, Italian chicken parmesan. It's kind of the same idea. You got the tomato sauce and the fries.
You combine
the
pasta. I was thinking separately. Yeah. Fried catfish over here. Spaghetti with meat sauce over here.
Yeah, I was thinking
coleslaw.
That too, but what she says makes a lot of sense.
Because it's going to touch.
Yeah, they're going to touch.
They're going to touch.
I got no problem with that. I'm not a unit eater. You know, a unit eater eats one.
Yeah, in the separate.
Turns it around, eats the next one, and, you know, does not want them to integrate.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a bite of this, bite of that.
Yeah, I think you think of it one day.
That's interesting. I like that.
I love that idea. And, we have a caller?
We do. Edgar from Jackson, Mississippi is calling us. I think it could be Dr. Edgar Smith.
It could be Dr. Edgar Smith.
Good morning, Edgar.
Good morning. How are you?
The good doctor. How are you?
The old man's doing good. I'm straying. Actually, I'm not. My comment is not to the point of size, but you guys have mentioned catfish fillets and chunks and so forth. But when I was growing up in the Delta, we ate catfish steaks.
Ah, catfish steak.
Talk to us about that.
Yeah, you would actually, in those days, we didn't eat very much catfish. We ate buffalo because catfish was considered the bottom feeder, so people didn't eat very much of it. But we eventually started eating catfish, and we didn't fillet it. We cut it across the catfish and make really just kind of thin steaks and fry those in cornmeal and pepper and what have you. Well, that's my favorite catfish.
So that's how they did it in Hollandale.
That's how we did it in Hollandale. That's right.
Now, Katie, do you know anything about the catfish steaks? Do y'all have anybody calling for those?
Yeah, we sell a lot of catfish steaks. I mean, a lot of people are the same way. That's how they grew up eating it, and they think it has more flavor because you've still got the bones in there. So it's really a lot of people, that's what they request. Hmm.
Didn't know that, but Edgar, I must say, I missed you on Catfish Friday at Tougaloo College this week. You and I have shared many a Catfish Friday.
Yeah, well, we weren't able to make it, and I missed it too, but hang in there. We'll be there next year, lady. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks so much for calling, Edgar.
Right.
It's always good to hear from you. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. You know, Carol, besides catfish, there are other fishes in the sea. And, you know, this time of year, we on Cooking and Coping, one of our friends, Tim Pierce, was talking about a crappie fry. Now, Katie, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can't sell crappie, right? It can't be sold commercially. Is that correct?
Not that I know of. Yeah, we definitely don't.
Yeah. Well, I've never heard of it.
Well, we have the number one crappie lake in the United States right here in Mississippi, and that is Grenada Lake. And also, we have, they're called the Big Four.
Okay.
And it's, Malcolm, is it Arkabutla or Arkabutla?
I think it's Arkabutla. That's how I say it.
Arkabutla, which is known for the size of their crappie, Enid, Grenada, and then Sardis. And if you, like, go into a Fish and Game magazine or something like that, they have people that come to Mississippi to fish the Big Four.
Oh, boy.
So that's cool.
That's good to know. I love crappie.
Well, for the last part of our show, I want to talk about the most important thing for us about catfish and get Katie to tell us why it's important to eat American farm fresh catfish and how you determine if you're eating American farm fresh catfish.
Well, you know, it's labeled, has to be labeled U.S. farm-raised catfish, so always look for that when you're in the stores or in a restaurant. They'll label it as well. But it's just important to know where your food is coming from, any type of food, really. Know how it's being raised, how it's being processed, and also to support our local economy. It's a big deal to support Mississippi products, U.S. products. And you know, the imported fish, you really don't know where it's coming from, how it's being raised, what type of environment it's coming from. And now catfish is one of the only seafood that is USDA inspected every single day. So just like meat and poultry, we're inspected every single day. So you really can feel really safe by buying U.S. catfish.
Great point.
And what are the catfish producing states other than Mississippi?
Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana. There actually is one processor in North Carolina and Arkansas.
It's mostly the big three there.
So definitely a southern thing.
Right.
But I was in Vietnam a few years ago with the Culinary Institute of America, and we took a group of chefs over there, and we were learning about the basics, foundations of their food. And it was really shocking to me to see these huge catfish nets. Mm. You know, there were like big, huge telephone poles with big nets in these rivers that weren't very clean.
Wow.
It gave me pause.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's not how we do it here in the Delta. Right, Katie?
Right, I feel like most of the other catfish that's wild or imported, you don't know really what it's eating. Most of the time it's bottom feeders, but farm-raised catfish, we feed on top of the water, a floating fish feed, so you don't get that muddy flavor. You get a real clean flavor.
So what exactly is their diet? Is it sort of a meal? Is it, what do they eat?
It is. It's, we have a co-op feed meal where we make our own catfish feed, and it's kind of a mix of vitamins, minerals, cornmeal, soybeans. So it's kind of just a mixture of that.
Wow. So you can grow the soybeans on the property and feed them to the catfish.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Because that's kind of I understand Edgar, who just called in, and he was talking about how that the catfish was seen or sometimes seen as the bottom feeder. Mm-hmm. But in my generation of lifetime, that's not how I saw the catfish. It's kind of like what Katie's talking about, farm raised right, you know, inspected and things like that, just like any other type of food.
And that's just because you're so very young.
Well, there is that.
Well, I'll take it.
Well, I love this famous quote by Mark Twain, and Mark Twain said, "The catfish is a plenty good enough fish for anyone."
There you go. And that was even before farm-raised.
That is,
yes,
before.
Right. He knew what he was talking about.
He knew what he was talking about. He never met a fish he didn't like. That's great. Well, Katie, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate you coming on and talking about the catfish and what Simmons Catfish is doing. We're thankful, and we appreciate you coming on short notice.
Well, thanks so much for always supporting the catfish industry. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, Carol, when is the next catfish fry so Java and I can put it on our calendar?
Put it on the calendar.
Well, the next fry you can put on your calendar is going to be a brim fry.
Oh, a brim fry.
Because you, Malcolm White, are going to come out and catch the brim.
I'm going to slay them.
Yeah. Malcolm and a friend came out. Actually, the great writer Richard Ford came out and caught several buckets of brim last year.
And tell our listeners in Java about the filleting process that goes on out there at your
You know, lake. I was gonna ask you to do this, but the day that Malcolm and Richard came out, Henry Thompson, who is the uncle of Patrick Wilson, who was your fishing guide, came out and he actually took all the bones out of the brim.
Like a butterfly process.
It was like a butterfly process. And he used to work at the old Jackson Packing Company. And he still had his fillet knife from there. And
Which is like a razor blade. Yeah.
And we had never seen anybody do it. I know you made a little video of him doing it. But the fish ended up butterflied with not a bone in it, and it was absolutely delicious.
It's an art. I've never seen it before, and it really maximizes the flesh of the brim. And these brim are large. They're as large as the Bible. I mean, they're huge. These are big brim.
Yeah.
Now, filleting on the fly is you have to know what you're doing. You have to know what you're doing.
And I usually don't fillet. I mean, I just do the normal scrape the brim, score the brim, cut
fry
out the
whole.
Parts, and fry them whole. And a lot of people like to eat the crunchy tail. Not me, but that's that's the delicacy.
Java? The crunchy tail.
No, it's not a fish tail kind of good. Fish tails. No.
As a kid, we thought that was like a prize, but
You tried to get to it before your brother could.
That's right.
Or something.
It's like the wishbone when you cut up a chicken. The pulley bone was the thing we fought over, and then we of course had to split it and then make a wish, right?
Yeah.
But we're not talking about chicken today. We're talking about catfish.
And boy, has it been fun!
Yeah, no,
really
it's been real fun.
It's been great. We appreciate Java. Appreciate you coming in here and joining the fun.
Yeah, I'm already thinking about when the next time I am going to fry some fish. I don't know. I got to find some time. One thing we didn't talk about, I got to try the peanut oil, but also when you're frying the fish and for the fish fry, your playlist has to be correct.
There you go.
That's one of the key aspects of a good fish fry a good fish frying experience.
And you got some thoughts on what tunes to spin?
This weekend it was all about Kendrick Lamar and Drake. They're having a beef. But that was
so you worked it out in musically.
Yeah, that was
on your playlist.
That was my playlist for my personal fish fry.
Yeah, I always have to start with Taj Mahal.
Yeah,
and
I like
it makes
that
me
one.
Think of our dear friend Bruce Browning
absolutely.
Singing Taj Mahal catfish song.
Well, kids, it's been fun. Deep South Dining is a production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting's Think Radio. We are funded by generous contributions from our listeners, and we sure do thank you. Our show was engineered by Marissa Vaughn. We also were happy to have Katie Simmons Prosser join us from Simmons Catfish, as well as Java Chapman. So thank you so much from Carol and I. We appreciate you tuning in. Also to join us every Monday morning and every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. for more Deep South Dining, heard only on MPB Think Radio.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.